We have these states of consciousness. It's like an entire keyboard and you're only limiting yourself to playing one or two keys out of maybe 20. And then maybe, hopefully, you use like a new aspect of your personality and that lights up the prefrontal cortex. And maybe that's like the ultimate version of breaking out of homeostasis.
I sent two units. They're bringing her down now.
No, Lieutenant, your men are already dead.
The future is approaching faster than ever.
Technological change is speeding up, and your already maladapted evolutionary mismatches are multiplying.
In the future, the current version of you is already dead. The way around that is to keep learning, keep evolving, mentally, psychologically, physically, and financially.
Hello, this is Ludvig Sundström, and welcome to Future Skills. With me is
Michael Seeding.
And we're the podcast that prepares you for a future of accelerating change.
Today we're going to talk about the Myers-Briggs test. What is it?
Well, it's the world's most popular personality test.
Today we're going to talk about how to use it and why it's important for you. I think it's a very useful metacognition tool.
I think we should explain that. I don't know about you. You probably did it a long time ago, I guess, because it's a really old test. And it's something that's been in the workforce for many years, which we're going to get into. But for me, I've always resisted these personality tests. And part of the reason that I resisted the personality tests was because I don't really want to be defined by someone else. But now when I finally do look at it a long time later, and after being able to like learn a bunch of other stuff and put it into context, I actually think it's pretty accurate and pretty good. But I didn't take my, how do you say it, like first impression from this test. Does that make sense?
Yes, and I can definitely see where you're coming from. I don't like to be labeled either. However, you can use the test as a tool to see how others perceive you, whether that's a correct picture or not.
It's kind of uncomfortable to ask someone about that.
Yes, maybe. But I think it depends on your age and situation, too. Even if we have an ambivalent sentiment towards these tests, we can at least agree that they hold some value. But let's move on to Carl Jung. He had an idea about four functions of information management, mostly. This test measures those. It measures how you handle your inputs and your outputs in terms of information. For example, is the way you gather information, is it intuitive or is it more concrete and tangible? And given the information you have gathered, how do you form your decisions? Do you base them on a feeling or on reasoning?
I think one of the things that I have thought about when it comes to this is that there are a lot of different letters and difficult combinations to remember, but the point is, can you understand each of the concepts individually? And then if you can do that, then the different combinations, I guess, make sense. But for me, and we'll get to this later, the big point for me was understanding the different concepts that we have these different functions and they're more native to some people than others. That was one thing. So there's like a temperament thing or a genetic thing, whatever you want to label it. But some people are more prone to use one function than the other. And then the other thing is that I think you can switch between them. But if and when you do that, you should think of these two like kind of like the nervous system, where it's either on or it's off. You're either like resting and you're in homeostasis, or you're doing something new and wild and you're breaking out of homeostasis. But it's either on or off. And it's the same with these functions, I think, where you're either using one of them, but that goes to the like mutual exclusion of the other one.
The way I see it is that the test measures your natural inclination towards a certain type of decision making. But once you know what that is, then you can make an informed and conscious decision to break out of that box.
Yeah, and I think if we go back to it, like the different four functions, you have the sensing versus intuition, you have the introversion versus extroversion, then you have the thinking versus the feeling, and then you have the perceiving versus the judging. And that makes up a lot of different combinations. But if you want to put it in a concrete way, it's like, okay, are you sensing or are you intuiting? That means, do you learn things and gather information by using your senses and like snapping up whatever's in your environment? That's sensing. Or are you using your intuition, which is like being sort of a shaman and going inwards and gathering something from your subconscious. No one knows how that happens, which is a really interesting topic in itself.
And just to conclude this part, I think you could look at the sensing person as almost like a physicist who gauges actual things in reality, whereas an intuitive person picks up on less concrete information.
And then if we go on to the other one, which is introversion versus extroversion, I mean, everyone knows about this because it's so talked about. It's like, do you want to be alone and just think about things and learn? That's how you feel comfortable. Or do you want to be with friends? And if you're not with friends, you feel alone and bored and like bad.
I think a good and practical way to get a feel for whether you are extroverted or introverted is whether you charge your batteries and become energized when you are in company with other people or when you are alone. I myself is quite introverted. I always build up my energy when I'm alone, and it kind of drains when I'm with other people. And I just want to add that neither way is better or worse than the other. It's just two different ways of managing information.
Yeah, I think you can draw parallel to, first of all, when we did our Swedish podcast, we did like a year ago or something, we did an episode about combining your passion with an ecosystem or an industry. And we came up with this like really cool model where you have you make a list of like your top three interests. And then on the other hand, you make a list of the top three industries that you would like to work in. And then you like make a dice out of it and you throw the dice. No, I thought that was a pretty cool way to think about it.
So it's not a question of whether one side of the coin is better than the other. It's about the fit. It's about the intersection between you and your characteristics and the world.
And then if we go on to the third function, it's like thinking versus feeling. And this is another one. Thinking versus feeling and introversion versus extroversion. Those are popular. Everyone knows those. But I still think it's important because it's like, are you questioning why things are like they are, kind of like a philosopher, or analyzing what it could lead to, like higher order consequences? Or is your mind relatively quiet and you don't think so much and you're like more feeling based in the moment? Like, I think if people think a lot, they need to meditate or exercise a lot to quiet their mind. Whereas people who are feelers, they need to read a lot more books.
Are you a natural reasoner? Do you weigh pros and cons logically? Or do you base your decisions on a feel for the general problem? Do you compute or do you feel? Once you reach a certain level of expertise within your field, maybe like Martin Sundqvist within trading and analyzing the markets, or Annie Duke in poker playing. Once you reach that level, it's very easy to just relax and rest on your laurels and base your decisions on gut feeling and expert recognition. Those tools can be very useful, but they should be used carefully. They should only be used to filter out interesting avenues of investigation, but then those things must be investigated thoroughly, at least as thoroughly as anything else.
And then if you go to number four, are you perceiving or judging? And you can think about this like this. Are you open-minded and you're always like ready to take in new information? Or are you close-minded and you just want to affirm and strengthen what you know? And I think this is, in one way, it's true, but at the same time, it's the wrong terms to use. Like, open-minded is associated with being positive, and it's like a good thing, which it is. But at the same time, you have to be close-minded if you have a goal. And then if you're close-minded, you're a bigot, and it's not good to be a bigot. So, but at the same time, you need to have some goals or you're not going to get anything done. So, you need both.
I often find point number four, or the last point on a list, to be pretty vague. And I think this is the case as well. Or maybe I'm just tired. But I think judging, having a judging character, that sounds really negative. And I think Annie Duke said so much as well in our interview with her. Just take the damn test, or at least read up on the 16 personalities and what judging and perceiving actually means in this case, because it's not at all as bad as it sounds. Again, neither side is better or worse. It's just two different aspects of this character trait.
Yeah. So I think a question for you right now is, which of these four processes would you say that you're in right now, in this moment? in this particular moment, which your dominant process are you sensing or are you intuiting? Are you introvert or extrovert? Are you thinking or are you feeling? Are you perceiving or are you judging?
To start with, I see a fact here. I'm sensing a fact. That fact is that you have posed a question to me. It's not that I'm trying to feel a sentiment or an atmosphere here. I'm actually just picking up the fact that you asked a question of me. So I would say I'm very much a sensing type in this sense. So that's the input process. So onto my decision process. And I would definitely say that I'm thinking. Right now, I'm weighing pros and cons, and I'm trying to find a logical answer to the question you asked me. So I'm not really feeling or intuiting an answer to the question. I'm rather thinking about it in a logical way and trying to put forward as good an answer as possible. So that's a thinking process guiding my decision. Finally, I was more judging than perceiving. I was definitely fact-based. And I would say I'm almost manifesting the perfect example of my own personality type, INTJ or ISTJ. I've gotten both.
I think this is like what you just did now. I think that's sort of kind of walkthrough. That's like a super good metacognitive exercise where you're like using different parts of the mind and thinking different ways and viewing yourself from different frames of mind.
At the next meta level, what I did is exactly what an INTJ person would do. So my personality type is manifested perfectly in my answer. The anomaly here is that I'm telling this to all our listeners. That's not really an introverted thing to do. However, we are pretty well shielded here in my little studio.
Like we said, this is the most popular personality test in the world, and probably for a good reason. But at the same time, you can see sort of the same, not the same, but very similar kind of nuances and the underlying concepts in other, both cultures and religions and also like books. And so I have a couple of these that I noticed. First of all, there's a book called The Outsider by Colin Wilson. And what he says in this book is that man strives for unification, so he wants to be one. And the way to do this is to use different aspects or nuances of your personality. And those are like the functions. So, okay, you have a dominant function. And then the way to become, quote unquote, a whole is to use the other one. And then what they call in, if you go back to what we were talking about, the Myers-Briggs personality thing, then they call this, they actually talk about this in the book, and they call it developing your auxiliary process.
We often talk about breaking out of homeostasis, breaking out of the box. And this is a similar concept that I really like. You have a dominant process and an auxiliary process. And what you need to do here is explore your auxiliary process. I think it's a useful exercise in itself in terms of breaking out of your ordinary patterns. But it can also be a valuable tool since you strengthen one of your weaker links.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the way I see it is that it's not an exercise, it's like a lifelong practice. I mean, I think that's at least the way that I consider it when we do these like self-knowledge notion episodes, self-knowledge, then it's none of it is a quick fix. It's like very long term, but it can give a better guide over the long term where to go, like walking on a road or picking the direction, like knowing where to go on the continuum.
In fact, for the both of us, making this podcast is a way for us to explore our auxiliary extroversion. We're both pretty introverted. It's a challenge putting ourselves out there.
Yeah, it fits right into it because it's like we have this natural process to think and learn things. But at the same time, to develop as an individual, you also need a medium of expression. If you look at it from an even higher pattern, that's a way to explore and become a more balanced individual. And I mean, if you look at, for example, social media, why it's so popular, it's because it gives a very easy outlet for people to provide an opinion. And then if you go to Hinduism, you can draw really interesting parallels to, first of all, what you're talking about, developing your auxiliary process, but also how, you know, these personality types. So they've found kind of the same thing in another culture, you know, in India and those cultures. And you can draw parallels to what they have in Hinduism, which is karma yoga, the path of action, or jnana yoga, which is the path of knowledge, or bhakti yoga, which is the path of devotions. And then if you compare that, that's basically feeling, intellect, and body. Compare that again to the Myers-Briggs model, and it's like, okay, you have sensing, thinking, and intuiting. That corresponds to feeling, intellect, and body. And it's like, you can see this pattern emerge in different cultures, using different words and terminology, but there has to be something underlying it, right? Only except you're maybe interpreting it different per culture, because everyone, first of all, they're using different words, and then after other things, like there are other things involved, like using gods in Hinduism, whereas the Myers-Briggs model doesn't have any gods. But at the base of it, I think there's the same sort of observation that you've seen some sort of observable pattern of a reality.
Maybe this could be a helpful picture. This is the way I see it, at least. Even if you don't agree with any of these things, any of these tests, religions, or movements, whatever you're looking at, you can still see them as points or excitations in a truth field. And then you can interpolate between these points and map out the actual reality and find your own truth. And I want to emphasize that taking a test like this, that should just be the starting point for your self-exploration, definitely not the end-all answer to all.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've read a lot about this stuff. And the funny thing for me is that none of this made any sense for me for a long time, because I was just looking at it granularly, one thing at a time. But then when I look at it all together, it makes sense and I can sort of synthesize it in a way. But when I looked at it one by one, I thought it was all just stupid horoscope shit.
When I was younger, in my teens and maybe even my early 20s, I could become furious when somebody said that they knew me or that's just like you. I just became so angry thinking that another person had the audacity to say that they know me and my decision processes so well that they can just predict exactly what I was going to do. And I was thinking quietly to myself that you have no idea, not even I have any idea of who I am. So how dare you say that you have me mapped out? So if I thought that I couldn't know me and another person could definitely not know me, then imagine what I thought about a test, a simple test. How could that have any idea? But over the years, I've come to realize not only that other people may know more about me than I do. I mean, nowadays, we know that Google and Facebook knows ourselves better than we do. But I've also come to realize that these tests, they hold snippets of truths. They can mirror certain facets of my personality, and they can not least be starting points of investigation. I think that's the most important thing to remember about these tests.
Yeah, I think the big lesson for me at least is gather the input as you go along, and don't just look at one thing. Gather a big picture over a long period of time and compare it to your own experience also. And I think I can come up with another example, speaking of, you know, the comparison with the model in different other cultures. I can come up with another one, which is, you know, karma yoga in the Hinduism. That's like stoicism. You know, you're focused on taking action. You're not focused on the results. You're not focused on whatever other people are doing. You're just trying to focus on what you can control. That's another, like, the same concept has sprung up in different cultures. And it's kind of different, but at the same time, at the root, it's sort of the same thing.
Interesting. And in that context, just the other day, I was listening to a podcast about evolution. And the main message was that evolution doesn't care at all about perceiving actual reality. It only cares about the results. So the way, for example, our vision and our eyes treat incoming lights and radiation, that really doesn't have anything at all to do with what real reality is. But that doesn't matter.
We have these states of consciousness, and then it's like you have this breadth of experience, but it's like an entire keyboard, and you're only limiting yourself to playing one or two keys out of maybe 20. And then the rest of the time we're doing stuff that doesn't really use the prefrontal cortex, so we're habituated. And then we get stuck in a feedback loop, and then we become like a robot. And then maybe, hopefully, you use like a new aspect of your personality, and that lights up the prefrontal cortex. And maybe that's like the ultimate version of breaking out of homeostasis.
Yes, great. Thank you, Ludwig, and thank you myself. And thanks to our audio guy, Alexander Martin, who I'm sure have had absolute hell editing this podcast due to some production issues.
I hope you take a walk while you're listening to this, and if you're not, then maybe we should spank you.
Alternatively, if you're not into that billions activity, just leave a review on iTunes. We would really appreciate it.
Yeah, that works too.
Bye.